CNN will now project that Democrat Raphael Warnock is elected to the U.S. Senate.
Thank you so very much. I come before you tonight as a proud American and as a son of Georgia. My roots are planted deeply in Georgia soil. A son of my late father, who was a pastor, a veteran, and a small businessman. And my mother, who as a teenager growing up in Waycross, Georgia, used to pick somebody else's cotton. But the other day, because this is America, the 82-year-old hands that used to pick somebody else's cotton went to the polls and picked her youngest son to be a United States senator.
CNN can now project that the Democrats will be the majority in the U.S. Senate. John Ossoff, the Democratic candidate in Georgia, he is defeating David Perdue, the Republican candidate.
Georgia, thank you so much for the confidence that you've placed in me. I am honored by your support, and I will look forward to serving you in the United States Senate with integrity and getting things done for the people of Georgia. Thank you so much.
This historic election changes the game for the Biden administration, which can now pass laws and make executive appointments without Republican obstruction.
Stop the steal! Stop the steal! Stop the steal! Stop the steal!
But the euphoria of the Democrats' win here in Georgia was quickly overshadowed by the chaos in Washington, D.C. this past week, and a president clearly fomenting violence.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
I'm Mary Fitzgerald, editor-in-chief of Open Democracy, and I'm joining you with our North America editor, Aaron White, from downtown Atlanta, Georgia. We've traveled across this state during this special Senate runoff race. Aaron, what have we seen here over the past couple of weeks?
Well, what we've really seen is an incredible grassroots mobilization of millions of voters to push Democrats over the line, winning the slimmest of majorities in the U.S. Senate.
It's made us quite hopeful, hasn't it? Despite the ugly scenes in D.C. and the ones we saw firsthand here in Georgia.
Yes, there really are incredibly important and inspiring lessons to take from what just happened here in the state. What thousands of organizers pulled off here over years is the political future.
But the question is, will Democrats learn from this? And can they build on what's happened here in Georgia to pull this country out of its deep crisis? As listeners from our last episode might remember, I was born in Georgia back in the early 80s, and I've always thought of it as a deeply conservative place. But after Biden became the first Democrat president to win here since 1992, I've been on a bit of a journey, talking to friends, relatives, political experts and organizers, and relearning what I thought I knew about this state. Before coming back here to Georgia with you, Aaron, I spoke with lots of organizers, including Helen Butler, who's been doing voter mobilization work here for more than 20 years. She told me about how two factors helped Georgia go blue in November.
What we've always told people about is that public policy impacts every facet of your life from the day you're born to the day you die and everything in between. It was highly realized this election cycle because of two things: criminal justice, the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, the killing of Breonna Taylor, the killing of George Floyd. That again showed people that it's important to have elected officials that will make laws that are just for everyone. And then COVID came along. COVID really impacted healthcare. What kind of healthcare you got? Because you had to close down a lot of businesses, a lot of people lost their jobs. So it showed that, well, for me to get my tax dollars back in an unemployment benefits, I got to have an elected official that will do the right thing. and having trusted messengers tell them, now do you see why this is important? Do you see why having a good district attorney is important? Why it's critical to have good judges? Why it's good to have good sheriffs? Why it's good to have a good mayor that will appoint a police chief? It's all connected. And now they see that more than ever.
Aaron, you've been reporting on progressive organizing movements across the United States for open democracy for the past couple of years. So I was delighted when you said you'd hit the road with me again to travel across Georgia for this special Senate election. What did we see here that's particularly stayed with you?
Well, we drove all over the state, but one of the places that really stood out was Gwinnett County.
Okay, so we just left a canvassing launch event in Gwinnett County, which is a small suburb on the outside of Atlanta. What were some of the main takeaways that you got from that, Mary?
Well, the thing that really struck me was how meticulously organized this Get Out the Vote operation is. Making a plan to vote with people door to door is actually a pretty complex, detailed, focused process. They get people's numbers, they call them, they email them, they insist on speaking to every person in the household. There's a lot of forensic planning that goes into encouraging people to vote and holding them accountable for doing so. You know, it's friendly, it's supportive, it's sort of got a positive energy, but it is persistent and relentless. And it's clearly a technique and a strategy and a system that's been honed.
On election day, you are going to have this massive list of like 30 voters, maybe more. Let's shoot for like 40, 50 each. And you're gonna be like, okay, here's the 5 people I'm following up with at 8 a.m. Here's the 10 people I'm following up with at 9 a.m. And you're gonna be texting them that day, making sure they're getting to the polls, making sure they know their polling location. One of the fun things about Georgia is that sometimes they move the polling location day of.
Wow.
And so we will get that information as a campaign if they've moved the polling location. And then you can look at your list and say, okay, who are all my voters today who are going to that location? I'm gonna text them right now and tell them that it's moved.
And they were doing it all during a massive global pandemic with a particularly bad outbreak here in Georgia.
Can we eat in restaurants on the outside restaurant?
No.
If we're inside in the hotel lobby, can we take off our face shield if we're more than 10 feet away from someone?
No.
No. If you're driving with your partner and you're not in the same pod, how can you eat lunch if it's raining and you want to eat in your car?
Rotate. One person gets wet.
There we go. Yep. Are there any COVID questions?
And it's so striking that people coming from across the country, from California, from Delaware, from New York, to stand in a car park by the side of a freeway outside a Cracker Barrel next to the Hampton Inn, wearing masks and PPE and, you know, running through voter mobilization drills. It was really one of the most kind of nondescript places to see like a seed of the revolution take place.
My name is Melody and I'm a student. I'm from the Bay Area, and I think I'm here because as a Californian, I'm really worried about climate change. And a lot of my friends were staying with me during the pandemic because their houses were at risk for burning down. And one of their houses was actually partially destroyed by the fires. So yeah, that was something that really hit close to home, and I really didn't like the way that the administration was handling and denying climate change. So I flew over to Georgia yesterday, and I'm excited to be here.
We met volunteers who came here from all over the country, but the really important story is the years of groundwork that's been done by local organizations and movements here, and how necessary this has been. They're doing things like getting volunteer translators into Latino neighborhoods. Remember Gabriel, the restaurant owner in Gainesville, who we spoke with during one of our many car journeys on polling day?
Yeah.
I've had 3 people come up to me today. I've been here at this precinct all day. They've come up to me and said, you know, hey, I need some help. I don't know if I'm registered to vote. And I asked them, well, did you vote in the general election? And they said, yeah, but don't you have to re-register again? So things like that, you know, aside from obviously the obvious issues of translating the ballot, which in and of itself is a very intimidating thing if you don't know the language, you know? So that's the biggest one. The fact that they might not know how to cast their ballots because there's no material in their language.
One of the things I was totally amazed by here is how hard it is to vote in the state of Georgia, how many barriers and obstacles are thrown in people's way, which is why these long-term organizing efforts, like those from the New Georgia Project run by Ense Ufot, have been so important.
Georgia has a long and a recent history of voter suppression. And so, you know, as the dust settles and as we sort of learn more about how these races were won and how this state was flipped, I think that it is important to know just how truly remarkable this was. We did it in the face of, again, extraordinary attempts to mute the Black vote, to mute the youth vote. And so I will just talk about the suppression attempts that we overcame in the runoffs. We saw that they reduced the number of early voting days. They reduced the number of early voting locations. They reduced the number of drop boxes. There was a memo that went out about a week before the election from the Secretary of State that communicated his intent to criminally prosecute individuals or organizations like ours who were preparing to do what we call line warming activities. So bringing comfort to voters, bottles of water, hot coffee, hot chocolate, pizza, that we would be prosecuted if we participated in those events. So those are the waters in which we were swimming as we were working to get the vote out. And how we overcame it was direct voter contact. Direct voter contact gets the goods, right? So we made, we knocked on over 2 million doors. We made almost 7 million phone calls and sent 4 million text messages talking directly to Georgia voters about the importance of this moment and why we need to show up for each other by voting in these two elections.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh, a historically Black neighborhood in the south of Atlanta, we really saw Ense's New Georgia Project in action.
So there's like a DJ outside of the polling location. It's a very different vibe than where we just went.
And I've just seen a bus drop off a bunch of voters here. It seems like there's an operation going on to actually bus people here to this polling station.
And give them some food as well, some snacks.
We're doing a winter relief jam. So we are passing out free scarves and free gloves. We also have free food for families in the community, but also people who happen to be voting today. So we're just doing some work in the community on election day.
And it's a good place because people are coming here, so it's a good place to hand out relief.
3 million people have already early voted, so it's pretty slow, but I think it's a good turnout.
And voters we met there really painted a clear picture of what was motivating them to vote. Like Lawrence Miller, who is a 59-year-old former naval officer who came to vote with his husband.
So race has to do with almost everything, unfortunately, in this country. There is nothing more important than race, regardless of what the issues are. And legislation is based on keeping one race up and other races down. And the Republicans, under the leadership of Trump, well, they don't think of us as human. And as a result of that, they feel like they can say anything anytime they want to, any way they want to, and that it should be acceptable. And they've got some blind followers who just accept what they'll say.
Listening to Lawrence there, I really think it's worth reflecting on what was on offer this time to Georgia's voters and how it was different.
My name is Ronald Town. I grew up on the other side of the train track, but I went to middle school right here, Pauls Middle School. I grew up right here at this Pauls. And the reason I am voting for a change, it's time.
Ronald told us why he was voting for one of the Democratic candidates in particular, Pastor Raphael Warnock.
I used to go to Ebenezer Baptist Church where he used to preach. He's not trying to be a politician. That's what everybody don't realize. He's not trying to be a politician. He's just trying to make a change.
And not only is Warnock Georgia's first Black senator, when he was born, both of Georgia's senators were racial segregationists.
Yeah, and as pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, which they call America's Freedom Church, where Martin Luther King once preached, Warnock really directly inherits and symbolizes that civil rights legacy.
1982, a 12-year-old is accused of stealing and dragged out of store, told he looks suspicious because his hands are in his pockets.
I'm Raphael Warnock, and that boy was me. Back then, I didn't understand how much the system works against those without power and money, that the rules were different for some of us. Too often, that's still true today, especially in Washington. I approve this message because it's time for that to change.
That was one of Warnock's campaign ads. I do think it's worth telling people, too, just how much money was thrown at this race. More than $500 million, much of it on blanket advertising. Every time we turned on the radio in the car, they were there.
Warnock isn't going to tell you himself, but he's a militant fundamentalist who spent decades spreading a radical political agenda.
Great.
Exactly. Warnock wants to defund police and dismantle the prison system.
Ugh.
Warnock is so radical, he wants to pack the Supreme Court, pass the Green New Deal, raise record taxes, and let government redistribute American wealth just like third world countries.
I thought you were telling me a joke.
That was just to get your attention. Trust me, Raphael Warnock is no joke.
This election, cast your vote and save our country.
That ad you heard was from Kelly Loeffler, one of the Republican candidates, and the racist dog whistles are unmistakable. That Raphael Warnock is somehow un-American, that he'd bring chaos and destroy America's way of life.
And of course, it's deeply ironic that just hours after he was elected, it was actually diehard Trump supporters who launched an armed insurrection on the Capitol.
I guess we should spend some time talking about all the things the Republicans did wrong and the crisis they're now in, both in Washington and here in Georgia. As Lawrence Miller in South Atlanta said, the Republican Kelly Loeffler made a fatal error by attacking Warnock's sermons.
Kelly Loeffler pissed off the black clergy. They are a dynamic group of people who try to stay as impartial as possible, but now they've stepped out of that and said, we need to stand up and say, hey, listen, this is wrong. This is just wrong.
Yes, we went to watch Kelly Loeffler speak to rural white voters on the back of a pickup truck last weekend.
Today is January 3rd, and we're in McDonough.
On the road to Macon, just outside of Atlanta. It's a beautiful sunny day, and there's a long line of people waiting to see Kelly Loeffler, who's bidding to retake her Senate seat for the Republicans. They're lining up outside Grits Family Restaurant in the main square. Not an overwhelming amount of mask wearing going on, and people packed in together quite tightly. Quite different from some other places we've been.
This battleground might be here in Georgia, but the nation's depending on us. We're the firewall to stopping socialism. We know that because we heard Chuck Schumer say, now we take Georgia, then we change America. Well, that's frightening because you know what he wants to do? He wants to raise taxes on you. $4 trillion in taxes on hardworking Americans.
To me, the lack of vision and ambition in Loeffler's pitch was really noticeable.
Right here in Georgia, every family, $2,000 off the bat, goodbye, up to the federal government, making it bigger, making your life harder, making government bigger, more bureaucracy, red tape, Green New Deal, socialized healthcare, turning your doctor's office into the DMV. No thanks. We got to hold the line right here, right? Are you with me holding the line?
Yeah. With thousands dying from COVID every day and an economic depression not seen since the 1930s, I'm not surprised that the message to hold the line and essentially keep things the way they are now didn't motivate enough voters.
But what I'm more interested in is what happens now Democrats do control Congress. Remember Tommaso, the volunteer canvasser from Oakland, California, who we met on Election Day in Savannah?
Well, there's just so much they need to do to undo years and years of neoliberal policies. Unfortunately, Biden himself is a little neoliberal, so I don't know how much he's going to do on that. But my pet issue is climate crisis. I've been fighting against the climate crisis for almost 15 years, and hopefully we'll finally get some action on that from the United States. I think his policy platform is decent. It's not enough, but it's good. It's better than what we've had in the past. The problem is the Senate, even as it is, even if we do get these two votes, we have a senator from West Virginia who has been in the bed of the coal industry since he was elected. He actually got elected on an ad where he was shooting a gun at the climate bill that was making its way through Congress at the time. So with only 50 votes and that guy representing West Virginia, we're likely not going to get anything through the Senate that will actually improve people's lives and air quality and stop this intergenerational genocide.
Yeah, this was so common amongst many of the organizers we met, especially those from out of state. They weren't particularly enthusiastic about Biden or what he can deliver, but they were pragmatic. They know a Democrat-controlled Congress gives them a much better shot at economic relief, climate change, healthcare.
I'm 21 years old. I'd say that we're afraid for, I guess, the future of this country economically, where the people with the most wealth and power accumulated are continuing to absorb more and more and more over the years as we continue to tax the richest people in this country less and less. I definitely have qualms with Biden and his, to me, commitments to corporate centrism, which scare me. But I also know that he's the only shot that the Democrats have of any kind of change in any of those areas that I just described.
Yes, and the pandemic has really put things in sharp focus for so many of them.
My name is Chris. I'm from Delaware. I'm out here because my dad actually got COVID a couple of weeks ago. It was right before Christmas, kind of like threw my mom for a loop. And I know that if they had been getting these, you know, monthly stimulus checks that like places like South Korea and other countries are getting, my dad wouldn't have had to go into work. He's considered an essential worker. My family's working class, and so it's like, you know, that he had to go in, had to pay the bills, had to, you know, pay the mortgage. And it was kind of that choice between being able to afford to like live in our house and like put food on the table or like potentially get COVID. And that's, you know, what ended up happening. And it was just really hard. And I know that, you know, every vote that I can get out this coming 4 days is one step closer to $2,000 checks, not $600 checks, maybe like, you know, monthly, who knows? You know, that's kind of why I'm out here.
So Chris was talking there about the Democrats' commitment, partly prompted by Trump, to pay out $2,000 stimulus checks to all Americans who earn less than $75,000 a year.
Yeah, and that feels like the most immediate and easy task the Democrats have on their plate, hand out money to people who badly need it. But everything else is going to be so hard.
Yes, and with such a slim Senate majority, it's going to be difficult to pass anything. And just this week, Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, has signaled potential opposition to passing those $2,000 stimulus checks.
And on the other side of this, looking at what just happened in Washington, I'm still really worried about what happens next with Trump supporters. There are millions of people across this country who don't accept the election result. Plenty of extremists, yeah, but also lots of the soft-spoken moms and grandmas we met across this state.
We don't mind losing. We just want to have a fair election and know that it was legal.
Or like the lady we met at the Stop the Steal rally at the state capitol the day after the vote. She was there alongside a former KKK leader, who you can actually hear in this next clip. But she also wasn't a big fan of people carrying weapons wherever they please.
It doesn't excite me. I don't think that it should be allowed just walking down the street as an everyday, although I do think that we have gun rights and I don't think they can take those away from us.
Trump 2020!
I'm not comfortable with just walking down the
street
with it.
Stop the steal!
It leads to nothing good, in my opinion.
And then, of course, there are the diehards. Remember Matthew at the Loeffler rally in Henry County? All into the voting machine and COVID conspiracy theories?
The machines are not even supposed to be onto the internet. But they've already proven as well in Savannah, Georgia, that the machines were talking directly with the Nest thermostats that are on the wall. This stuff has been suppressed. The media is not telling the world what is happening. The people is awake and the people have spoken. This man owns businesses. This man over here I was talking to, he owns businesses. I have three businesses right now. And the COVID is threatening to shut them down. We're no longer gonna be put in a hole, no longer gonna be put in a ditch and be stepped on with the hypocrisy that's taking place here. We are ready to defend our business just like the rooftop Koreans in California did in the Rodney King riots. If it takes us getting on the roof and taking control, then that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, looking back on that now, what Matthew told us was extra disturbing given the violence that erupted just days later. And you know, to me, looking ahead, it seems entirely possible that a far more competent far-right leader or movement than Trump could combine the energy of diehards who stormed the Capitol this week with a more broad-based appeal to the many millions of people on the right and the left still deeply dissatisfied with the status quo.
Yeah, and when we spoke with Greg Pallast, the journalist who's covered voter suppression here for years, he made exactly that point.
Just keep in mind, Trump ain't leaving. That is, he's leaving the White House. There's no question about it, I think. But he's going to be head of the right wing of the party. And he can punish senators and congressmen and congresswomen who don't toe the line. That's why he still had 94 congresspeople vote to not certify a Democratic election. It was crazy. It was decided by 7 million votes. So he's still there. And he's there to punish. And he's there to call out and punish. And you're right. We could have someone who will then be the candidate who takes Trumpism to a competent level, then look out. So it's not the next 2 weeks I'm worried about. It's the next basically 20 years. I'm very concerned that we have a new brown shirt force in America, which is empowered, which knows it can hold office. These are people who were considered fringe nuts that no Republican wanted to be seen taking a picture with. Now they're proud of taking their pictures with these barely disguised white supremacist organizations and violent organizations.
I do think this really is particularly a threat if Biden and Democrats aren't able to take advantage of their majority and pass substantive action on COVID, healthcare, and jobs.
But Aaron, given we're in Georgia, I think it's appropriate to look squarely at what just happened here and what it makes possible.
Yes, and if we're doing that, I think it's really worth reflecting on what Enze Ufot of the New Georgia Project told us about their strategy moving forward.
We don't elect messiahs. And so I think that our approach to the incoming Biden-Harris administration is that these are organizing targets. They are the party that is across the table that the people are negotiating with. It's just that we would much rather negotiate with Vice President Harris and President Biden, who have indicated a willingness to listen to the people and be moved by our stories and our priorities, very much so in comparison to the outgoing administration. That's where we are.
I really think what Enze and so many others like Stacey Abrams, Helen Butler, organizations like Mi Gente, and countless more have managed to pull off in Georgia tells an extraordinary and ambitious story of how change is possible, but not if it's top down.
Yes, it does invite a radically different way of doing politics. Long-term, bottom-up organizing led and run by people of and for the communities they serve, and not just pandering to the so-called center ground, but expanding the base. Here in Georgia, there was a higher percentage of black turnout in this runoff than in the November general election. More than 75,000 new voters were registered ahead of the runoffs, and more than half of them were under the age of 35.
Sure, they had a big influx of organizing help during the final critical days and weeks, but they've been building this for years, and that's made the election of someone like Raphael Warnock even possible.
I remember my dad in this moment. He used to wake me up every morning at dawn. It was morning, but it was still dark. It's dark right now, but morning comes. And scripture tells us that weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Let us rise up, greet the morning, and meet the challenges of this moment. Together we can do the necessary work and win the future for all of our children. Thank you. God bless you, Georgia, and God bless these United States of America.
You know what it feels like? Just as in the 1960s with Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, activists and organizers here have sent leaders in Washington a powerful signal of where things need to go now.
But I guess the real question now is, will they listen?
This Our Voices podcast was produced by Freddie Stewart, and special thanks also to Penny Dale.
Thank you for listening to this Our Voices podcast from Open Democracy. If you enjoyed this podcast and would encourage others to listen, head to iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a review. Open Democracy is an independent global media platform that is only possible because of your kind donations. To find out more or to make a donation, head to opendemocracy.net.